welcome to Redefining Outbound, a podcast series for sales leaders. I'm one of your hosts, Frida Odeson, VP of US Sales at Cognizant. I'll be interviewing a range of forward-thinking sales leaders on how and why B2B buying behavior has changed, and we'll be unpacking why these trends are important for outbound. I hope you enjoy the episode.
Hello, everyone. I'm here today with a very special guest. We have our own Evan Nelson, our VP of Customer Experience here at Cognizant with us today. Evan, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Frida, thanks for having me. I'm really excited to chit-chat. This topic today is near and dear to my heart, so looking forward to kicking it off.
Awesome. I'm excited to dive in. And for the sake of the podcast format, Evan and I are matching today. We're looking great. It's unfortunate most people are not going to be able to see that. So for the sake of the podcast, before we dive in, why don't you introduce yourself to the listeners?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm Evan Nelson, VP of Customer Experience here at Cognizant. I oversee customer support, customer implementation, customer success, professional services, a lot of different groups. But the one thing that all those groups have in common is we all play a big role in supporting the customers pre and post sale. So super happy to chat, as I said. I've been with Cognizant for coming on 2 years now, formerly at another company who shall not be named, but came over here and I've been really enjoying Cognizant quite a bit.
All right, awesome. So one question that we usually start with, which I'm interesting to hear your perspective here coming from the CX world, what does redefining outbound mean to you?
Yeah, that's just such a good question. I'm the type of person that's always looking for efficiency gains and optimization. And so when I think about the word redefining, it's essentially abandoning the status quo. What has worked in the past does not necessarily mean it's going to work today. And finding the right ways to connect with prospects in meaningful interactions, not just, you know, hopefully sending out an email campaign and hoping someone responds, but taking the time to really get to know who your prospect is, what they really care about. I think it's a great, great way of really sort of encapsulating what we do here at Cognizant too. Just a little plug, why not?
Yeah, love it. Cool. Okay, so today's episode is going to be a lot about like the customer journey, customer experience, sales and CX, like synergy, working together, all that fun stuff. But before we dive in, are you able to just give an overview over how CX is set up over at Cognizant and like why is it set up this way?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll start with the why it's set up and then I'll back into how it's set up. So essentially we wanted to build a team that can handle really usher the customer from the start of the relationship all the way through to realization of value and renewal. And I've done this multiple different ways over many different companies. And I've always found that having a really central CSM team becomes really critical to ensuring that customer is able to basically launch, right? Basically activate. And so the roles that are built around the sales organization, which is a super important aspect of this, and really that sort of orbit the customer, each do something a little bit different. So we have technical support, and that is your frontline support. You have to have good technical support at any software company, really any company, because you need to have someone there to just be transactional, right? That's what support really is. If I have an issue, I can pick up the phone, go on live chat, send an email, and another human being is going to answer my query and try to help me resolve my issue. We have solutions consulting, which is really the AE's partner in crime, to try to work with solution scoping, identifying tech stack, really trying to make sure that once the customer comes on board, that we have a good handle on how they plan on using the product. Then you have onboarding, who is really responsible for a customized enablement experience. And I use the word enablement, not training. I think training ends. If you think about enablement, it's an ongoing thing. It's education. And the onboarding team plays a really critical role and just say, okay, cool. You met with Frida, you liked the product, you bought the product. Let me show you how to use it in the way that we think makes the most sense for you and how you probably had outlined how you'd want to use it. And then finally you get to CSM. And I say that finally, because the CSM's job is to basically be there for all sorts of support. Now I don't mean technical support, but I mean go-to-market support, product ideation, workflow ideation, really understanding if you have new users that are coming into the tool, how do we properly re-enable those folks at points of renewal and upsell? How do we make sure that we're basically just keeping the ball in the air and making sure the customer's finding value? And the other part about CSM, we work really closely with our account manager counterparts. The difference between the two, in my opinion, is CSM is non-quota carrying. And that means one big thing for the customer. They're disarmed automatically. And they tend to tell CSMs a lot of stuff that they don't reveal to folks that are actually trying to sell or nurture the relationship in a commercially specific way. So big picture, you have sort of your customer, you have support, you have implementation, onboarding, you have CSM. Now that's going to change over time for us, right? We built that team in the way we built it out of necessity. And Frida, you and I had a big chat, you know, together with the leadership team last week. And we're like, holy cow, that's a lot of people. So I'd imagine over time, we'll try to find efficiencies and going back to redefining a process to figure out how do we make the most efficient go-to-customer motion for Cognizant whilst really focusing on that customer experience.
Yeah, super interesting. And that actually leads me right into my next question. Like, how does your function work with sales? And why is this relationship important? And maybe also, like, what can we do better there, right? What are some potential efficiencies that we're missing, that we're losing out on?
Yeah. I mean, look, the reason why customer experience is such an important concept to wrap your head around as a business is that we're all in the business of CX, right? So, you know, we were chatting a bit about prepping for this podcast. There's a clear distinction in my mind that there is no divide, really, right? We have different roles that we play as that customer goes through their full journey with us. And if we do our job correctly, they will continue through multiple renewal cycles and they'll grow and they'll expand. And so I think that the short answer to that question is, if you think about a GPS, this is a weird analogy, just bear with me. All right, think about a GPS. The AE's job, sales job, is to understand where the customer wants to go, right? So you're basically at the starting point. Your job is to say, okay, cool, Mr. Mrs. Customer, you're buying sales intelligence because you want to supercharge your go-to-market function to penetrate a new vertical. Cool. Now, for us, once we sort of like get the journey started, right, we know that that final outcome for that customer is penetrating that new vertical. And so where we come together is by understanding and sharing information back and forth, we can ensure that we make good on the promises, not that we made to the customer, but also the promises the customer made to their business. Because remember, as a buyer, I need to advocate for budget to buy a piece of software. My skin is on the line, right, if I mess it up. And so when you put it into that sort of like dramatic context, right, y'all are building out this really solid foundational relationship, and it's our jobs to not destroy it post-sales. And it's kind of a weird way to put it out there, but that's really what it is, right? How can we do everything in our power to support? I'll pause for a second and gather your thoughts. I don't think I've ever described it to you in that way, Frida.
Yeah, I think that's like super enlightening, right? Everyone's responsible of the customer experience, and it starts with the SDR reaching out, right? And I focus a lot of my team, something I call like win by how you sell, right? The buyers, or the buying journey, or the buying experience with your company is a window into what's going to be like being a customer, right? And like even a small thing, like I tell my AEs all the time, like how quickly you respond to an email, how quickly you follow up after a call, like what you put in that email, right? Is that just some sloppy email that you're sending out, or have you put time into that? Like all those like tiny, tiny details, like how you're dressed on calls, how you carry yourself on calls, right? Having multi-threading internally, right? It's just you throughout the entire sales process. They think they're going to talk to one person after, like there's not going to be a ton of support, right?
Yeah.
And that's why I love the concept of, I call it like internal multi-threading, right? So everything you do sort of paints a picture of what it's going to be like being our customer. And you can absolutely win by how you sell. I've seen millions and millions of examples of that where actually other companies out there might have a better fit product, but they decided to go with you because they felt like they were going to get better support. Because to your point, buying software is absolutely nerve-wracking, right?
Yeah, it is. I bet on the receiving end of a bad software purchase, and it is not fun. It is not a fun thing. You look silly. you lose credibility. You have to go in and basically apologize for wasting money. It gets not fun. I love, selling and winning that way that you described it. Like, you asked me a question, like, what could we be doing better? Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's any one thing. I think the more we engage with each other, our teams, the more we can pass knowledge back and forth, because there's obviously going to be things that skill sets that your team has picked up that mine has not, and vice versa. And I think of some of the best calls that I've been on with some of your reps where they're bringing me in to talk with a prospect. That prospect is like, are we making the right decision? And then I'm picking up on some of the cues and some of the verbiage that we're using on the pre-sale side. And then I'm sort of twisting that a little bit to then articulate what you, to your point you just made, what it's going to be like post-sales and the fact that we'll support you. And I think that's the biggest opportunity that we have as a go-to-market team and a go-to-customer team. And frankly, one of the reasons why my group is in the revenue organization to begin with is we need to be as close to each other as humanly possible so that we are not only maintaining the continuity of the relationship with the prospect and customer, but we're acting as a sounding board for each other internally. And we're saying, hey, like, what are struggles are you seeing in the market you're trying to penetrate right now? And then how can we see what success might look like post-sales and then bring that back to you so that you can then recycle it and repurpose it?
Yeah. And so that's like a bit Cognizant specific, but would you say that's like the case for most companies out there? What do you think in general, like, revenue leaders can do better to align?
You have to bring, you cannot consider these teams to have like totally different function, right? You have to break down that barrier, the barrier that I just described at the very beginning, right? When you create those barriers, you get finger pointing, right? You get people saying, oh, well, this was a poor deal. It should never have been sold. And this stinks. And if you have CSM teams that are quota carrying, because not all CSM teams are like ours, right? Some actually have commercial responsibilities. It becomes very toxic, right? So you have to be, as a leader, really trying to do everything in your power to break down any of those artificial barriers that are being built and continuously tell your team, like, we have to play to win and we can only do that together, and that we can learn from each other. And there might be a deal that, I don't like using the word missold, but there might've been a situation where the customer heard something that they wanted to hear. Because that happens all the time. And the first response is, oh, well, you know, the account executive must not have like answered the question correctly, or we maybe just glossed over it. And that type of toxicity can just erode the fabric of your sales organization, right? It's not finger pointing. It's, oh my gosh, okay, wait, maybe we did answer the question. Maybe there's an opportunity to then like think about other deals where that question might be asked. And we make sure to say to the customer, this is exactly what we mean by this answer, to remove that ambiguity.
Yeah, I think that's so spot on. Like, as an AE, like, your intention is never, hopefully, or I think you're in the wrong profession. Hopefully your intention is never to missell anyone, right? But there could be the prospect wants to hear what they want to hear sometime. The AE wants to hear what they want to hear sometime, right? So it's just like miscommunication. How do you think both teams can work closer together to ensure that sales is bringing on like sticky customer?
You know me by now that I'm a bit of a data jockey. Like, I love digging into the data. I like understanding how to answer questions with numbers and statistics. And so when you think about that process, the best ways that we can find the right fit customers are looking at the customers that retain, right? Looking at the customers that have a certain makeup, that have stayed with us for a while, that don't look too dissimilar to the ones that we're prospecting into, but there might be some nuances that make them slightly different. It could be the industry that they're in. It could be who they're selling to. It could be the verticals that they target. It could be the makeup of the sales team. You got to dig into that data. And it's not a fun exercise, if I'm being completely honest. It's a lot of work, and you have to have the right mindset, and you have to want to play detective, and you want to turn over every stone and not be too disgusted by the bugs underneath. But what that leads to is the ability to have a conversation. We say, look, the customers coming over that look like that have this makeup love us. They're super successful. How do we get more of those? Right. And how do we then think about what led to the success of that particular customer? And how do we replicate it? Like, as an example, I was looking into some data this morning, actually, and I was like, what is organic growth for a customer here? Like, what does that really look like? Do we have any idea as to when organic growth occurs, when a customer says, hey, I need to buy more? Not us asking them if they want to buy more, but customers saying, I'm seeing so much value. And we're like, oh, we've never looked at that. We've never looked at that data before. it's not easy data to get at. So now, like, I'm sitting down with ops and we're just like combing through, we're like trying to formulate a hypothesis that will allow us to do something really powerful for you all by saying, hey, not only do these customers renew, these are the customers that are expanding, and here's how they're expanding, and here's the success stories you can take back to them and say, oh my goodness, we just, you know, we've been working with a customer that's very similar to you. Not only did they find value in the first 3 months of using our services, they also started adding new business lines, and they did this by finding pockets of additional value themselves and applying our product to them. That organic growth can be incredibly powerful. Now, I know that's a bit tangential, but digging into the data is, in my opinion, the best way to answer any question. And you have to be empirical, because if you use gut, you know, make it a gut decision, you can anger people and it could be wrong. You could have the wrong assumptions. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love that. Data's data, right? Data doesn't lie. How, in your opinion, how vital is the handoff between AE and like CSM?
It is critical. And the reason why it's critical, so there are some organizations where that handoff isn't really a thing, right? Some organizations have 360 sellers, they maintain it. We don't, right? And so for organizations that don't have a 360 seller, that have some form of pre and post sales, understanding what happened during the sales process is going to make or break the initial relationship. But think about it this way. It's our first impression. No prospect has that's gone through a lengthy sales cycle wants to sit back down and explain again why they bought. They just don't want to do it, right? And that's a simplistic version of the handoff. So the handoff holds such critical information, not only about the buyers, it could be their temperament, it could be who you had to displace to get the deal in the door, it could be the makeup of the team, it could be the use case, it could be the success criteria. Hopefully it's all the stuff that I'm rattling off here, but it gives you, I'd say, like a dossier, right? Think about it this way. Could you imagine if you went to the hospital and you had some sort of surgery? Not surgery, maybe something minor. And the nurse did not have any of your information and had to come into the room and be like, hey, Frida, who are you? Why are you here? What have they done so far? Do you know how scary that would be? Now, that's an extreme version of what we're talking about here, but it's that same sort of concept. Now, when we do it right and we get the right information, when we get onto that first call with the customer, we say to them, hey, I know why you're here. I'm going to summarize this for you. Please let me know if I've missed anything. It shows that we listened, that we're genuinely investing in the partnership right out of the gate. And that leads to some of the most powerful post-sales relationships. And even that word, I'm going to stop using pre and post-sales. I'm going to say post-activation conversations, right? Where we've gone live, customers like ready to go. Post-contract is actually the better one to say. Right. And now the customer's like, okay, these guys, they care about us. They're already listening and they don't feel like they have to repeat themselves. And it also serves as an artifact. And this is the other thing to think about. When you have the handoff and you put it down in either a deck, you put it into your CRM, you put it into somewhere, it doesn't matter. Maybe you have a CSP. You can always go back and reference that information. Mm-hmm. And that serves two purposes. Number one, if the account changes hands further on in the future, the new CSM or AM who picks it up doesn't have to go back and ask the AE if they remembered exactly what happened. They can go back and reread it. But two, where it's super powerful is in every future engagement with your customer. And you can go back and say, look, like 6 months ago, this is what you said you had bought us for, but it looks like we're falling short. How can we get you back on track? So back to that weird little analogy of the GPS, it is the little beeping dot or the car going across the map. Like that is the thing that we're always going to be going back to and anchoring to.
Yeah, I think that's so spot on. And I'm curious from your perspective, what is like a very tactical way? Like, how do you facilitate this? Because this all sounds great. I agree. But like, how do you make that happen? How do you make sure it's lost in like translation, right?
For sure. Look, I think it depends on the size of the business first, right? So if we're at a smaller organization and maybe there's a handful of AEs and a handful of CS people, there's nothing stopping us from at every deal when it closes, having a quick meeting, right? Just at least saying, okay, like what happened? And that's a verbal version and it's going to require someone to take notes. And that person should be probably the CSM or maybe there's a document they sort of note take together. As you go get bigger though, it becomes a bit more challenging. We do not have the time in our calendar to meet about every single deal. We just don't. And so there are ways to document it. Scratchpad's a really good example of one of those ways, right? That's a piece of tech that lives inside of Salesforce. We built a custom object in Salesforce called the CS Handover Notes. I've used PowerPoints in the past. I've used custom CRM software. I've used CSPs. It doesn't matter. I've seen people do really well with a Google Doc, right? Mm-hmm. I think the important thing, though, is making sure that it's not just a retelling of the customer, their buying experience, but you're also gathering specific data points, right? We want to understand the size of the sales team that's buying, as an example. We want to understand the primary use case. We want to understand, have they used another provider before? So what you can do is you can kind of go through, like, what are the main things you need to know about your new customer? And then you can turn that into any sort of artifact as you want. If you have a Salesforce, or a CRM like Salesforce, rather, and you have an ops team that can build you out just a little custom object, you could build that out. You can also use cases. So I guess what I'm getting at is I rattle off these different ways. There's so many different ways to skin this cat. The important thing is just getting together and meeting and saying, okay, what's the information that's critical for us once the contract has been signed? And how can we ensure that it's being gathered before the contract is signed, right? Pre and post signature. And then it's up to whomever at the company to be as creative as they want to be. My recommendation, though, is don't go crazy, because adding a bunch of admin work, it does not make the AE's life any easier. In fact, it might lead to worse outcomes and less information.
Yeah, they're just going to like fill out NA.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that's super interesting. So it's like, rather than like, it doesn't matter too much how you do it. It's more about like doing it and being thoughtful about like what your business specifically care about.
1,000%. And look, if you're going after hyper enterprises, you should probably just have that handoff happen live on the customer call, where you schedule a kickoff call. We actually did this really well at the last company I worked at. It was the AE's responsibility to schedule a kickoff call. The AE would invite the customer and the CSM. And when we joined the call, there was a verbal handoff, a retelling of what actually happened during the sales process. And that led to a really great relationship with the prospect. We obviously here, we have a high volume of customers coming in. I know it's a big problem to have, but it makes it really difficult to, again, go back and get on every single call. So to your point, it doesn't matter how you're doing it, you just got to start doing it. Because it will lead to, it's transformative. You will have amazing interactions with your customers, and they will feel valued, and they'll feel that they care.
So we're coming down to my two final questions. I'm curious, I think maybe we touched on this a little bit, but if you can maybe summarize, based on what you've seen out there or what you've seen in previous organizations, what is like the most common mistake you see like sales or CS or CX leaders out there do in terms of facilitating that like relationship between sales and CX?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest mistake is to not care, right? To not really care what happens. To say, okay, whatever, deal's closed, the customer's gonna be fine. And not to have anyone tasked with taking the customer from that really holding their hand and taking them through the first part of the journey. Like, you can't drop that ball. It is so critical to have thought through how you want the handoffs to occur, to have thought through and put yourself in the customer's perspective as well. I don't think anyone really does that enough. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's the big mistake. Let me back up for a second. That's the big mistake. Not trying to put yourself in the shoes of that prospect in the process of becoming a customer and not thinking about how you would want to be treated if you were a customer of your own product. Like, do that one time and it will blow your mind. Now, you should probably do it several times with other people and different points of view, but it allows you to kind of think about things a little bit differently and get out of your, this is how we do it mentality into a hope. Maybe this is how we should be thinking about doing it.
Yeah, it reminds me of HubSpot early days. They always had like an open chair in every meeting, and that was like the customer was sitting there just to force themselves to like not forget about the customer, right? Sounds silly, but it's like such a good concept.
Yeah, I mean, it worked out well for them, didn't it? I mean, they're huge.
It did. All right, final question for today. Are there any trends or predictions that you think are going to be key for customer experience in 2024?
Yeah, and I think the big one is going to be trying to figure out how to defend the customer base, right? And that sounds silly, but we're seeing more and more pressure, and you deal with this all the time as a revenue leader. Budget's harder to get, and customers are being, they're taking more time, right? They're being really thoughtful. They're evaluating the tech stack. They're looking for areas to cut cost. And so that means once we get the customer, we have to be really focused on maintaining that business, because it's very expensive to lose a customer in their first year. So the big trend is going to be a shift from, hey, I'm just another support resource, to, hey, I'm here as your CSM to really focus on making sure you see value as quickly as possible, and so that I can solidify that relationship and hopefully find opportunities to expand it in the future. On the support front, so if we think about the whole customer experience, people love chatbots. I personally don't like them. I think it's going to be hard for people to stay away from AI. I think in customer support in particular, it is very important to have a human being interacting with your customers and not to cut corners. And I think what we will see is a lot of companies investing in AI, and it's sort of like changing the shape of their business, potentially negatively, it could be great. And then you'll see a resurgence of, oh God, we need more people on the ground that are actually human beings that can go back and support our customers. That on the CSM side too. So look, my prediction is we're going to see a lot more emphasis placed on the post contract side of the house, and folks are going to have to get back to basics and make sure they're really buttoned up on the key aspects of the journey. Otherwise, we're going to continue to see a lot of organizations really struggling to maintain their retention rates.
Yeah, I think that's so true. There's nothing more annoying for as a customer when you're like going to a website, there's chat, and you're like, great, I can chat with someone. I don't have to pick up my phone. And then it's like, are you looking for this? And it's like never what you're looking for.
I know. You can't downplay the importance of good support, especially at a time of need.
All right. I think those are some very good final words of wisdom. Thank you, Evan, for coming on the podcast today. It's great having you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Frida. We should do this again. It was fun.